So what have you been doing? You've been busy?
Yes, very busy. Yeah. It's I went to the inauguration, but I've been staying busy around here as well, keeping a pretty good schedule, including today.
Yeah, you have. You've been doing a lot of good in the neighborhood, as they say.
Yeah.
I also, if I may take one moment and take my hat off to you for staying with the traditions of the office.
Yes.
By going to the inauguration.
Yes.
Please don't take this as an offense. I'm very proud of you, and I'm very discouraged with some of your colleagues.
Yep.
But that said, I've said it.
But it also was a great opportunity to remind people of what our democracy means.
Yes.
There's an election. You don't have to like it, but you have to accept it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it showed the class of the people.
Yep.
Is, you know, it's me saying the Irish mother would say, you know, never show them your backside. Whatever that meant. All right, someday I'm going to have to sit down. My brother passed away just before Thanksgiving. So my sister and I are going to sit down and try to decipher what all those sayings meant.
Yes. Well, I think that they probably were meant to needle you.
Yeah. 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 Or straighten me up.
Straighten you up, yeah. You know, at the inaugural, one of the Republicans I was sitting next to was a nice guy. And
yeah.
He said, well, there's George Bush. And I said, you know, I said, I didn't agree with Bush on much, but I can tell you what, right now, as we're watching this, Bush and I are in agreement.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all I know is the democracy is working.
Yep.
The spoiled sports, the losers, we've seen them from from high school football and hockey to, you know, I got the job and you didn't. Yeah, you're no good, you know, kind of thing.
There's a big difference in our lives between the terms fair and favorable.
Right.
A lot of people will say I'm not treated fairly when they mean I wasn't treated favorably, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, we have a world that's kind of iffy-giffy, and we can't be iffy-giffy in our own country.
Exactly.
We gotta be cohesive.
It's still the star that people want to reach for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, I'd be anxious to see how the Congress works. I really will. There's so many class act people. Please take that as a compliment to yourself too. In the Congress, but boy, there's some wing nuts.
Oh, you know what? There's more of them every 2 years.
I know. You know, when I used to do a talk show, you've been here on Elm Street. There's Elm Street Hardware, and I'd have these people call up, and they were off the wall. I'd say, "Go down and tell." The proprietor CV down there to give you a wing nut because you've earned it. And well, they won. Some of them won.
Yeah. When Jim Wright was the speaker, he used to tell a funny story about Rayburn because he was a friend of Rayburn's.
And oh, yeah.
He said that Rayburn got a letter one time from a guy, and the letter was just off the charts. The critique, the anger, and all. And Rayburn wrote on the bottom of it, "I thought you should know some nut sent me this letter and signed your name."
I grew up. I won't do talk show again. That's a tough word to hold. I'll give you this one and we'll move on. I said to this one guy, Jimmy Roberto was a friend of mine, but he's also the mayor here. And
good
he
guy.
Was doing a great job. So this guy didn't like him. So he called up and he's making all these accusations, right? So I said, well, that's it. I'm giving you a 30-day hiatus. That's it. And I clicked him off. His buddy calls. Hey, Bill, how come he's got to go to Hyannis? So that's the caliber and the IQ you're dealing with. Oh, dear. So what do you foresee? You've been around. This isn't your first rodeo, and it isn't your first time in the minority.
No, I think the chaos is going to continue.
Yeah.
You know, the example that comes to mind is last week we're withdrawing from the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
And over the weekend, well, maybe we'll rejoin. We only withdrew last week, but maybe we'll rejoin. I also think if he sticks to pursuing undocumented immigrants that have felonious marks on their history, serious crime, I think that's going to be okay with the American people. Oh, I think that if it's people that have been law-abiding, paid their taxes, nice families, they go to church, they do all the things you're supposed to do, I then think it's going to become more complicated because, you know, Bill, now the meatpacking houses across the Midwest, I don't know what they'll do without them.
That and the farming.
And the other part of it is that they now pay $25 billion a year into the Social Security Trust Fund. And because they use false IDs, they're never going to draw the benefit.
Yeah, when I lived in Kansas, we were very appreciative of the migrant worker.
Yeah.
But that, then they would come and work in crop season and then go home.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes with a pretty good pocket full of money.
Yeah.
But they worked.
It's a big issue in the Berkshires. It's still a big issue in the Berkshires because they need them for the entertainment industry to take care of the guest houses, to take care of the hotels. It's like Cape Cod. I don't know how Cape Cod would work without the Jamaican laborers.
I think when the everything settles, I think you'll see that those are the felonious ones here will be the ones gone.
Yeah.
I personally, you know my background. I am concerned, you know, a little bit about the terrorists that got in.
For good reason.
For
good reason.
And I think it's going to take, and if I may, people like you, who've got a lot of experience, but also have a calm head and an ethical core. And, you know, I was there. Not all your colleagues have ethical cores. I love the guy. Who is the guy that was
it? You mean they're not selling Bitcoin with their picture on it?
Yeah. Who was the guy in the Senate, one of the hearings, saying, so what senator here has never seen somebody come in after hours drunk to vote on a bill? And boy, all of a sudden, that, but what do you see the biggest challenges are? Congressman.
Well, I think clearly Ukraine is a big issue.
And
I think Gaza is a big issue. I am heartbroken over what's happened there for all. And I think that you need a Palestinian state, but you need the Palestinian Authority and the others to recognize and provide the obligation of security to Israel. There is no way that Israel is going to recognize a Palestinian state until their security is guaranteed.
Exactly.
That's the number one responsibility of any government, to provide for the security of its people.
And can people argue about that? I don't know.
You have. I mean, now I think that there's that old argument that you're familiar with because of your military service, when people say, well, the first casualty of war is the truth.
Right.
But I think years ago, I read Tom Friedman's book, From Beirut to Jerusalem. And it was
I did too.
It was a really good book.
Yeah.
And I think his opening line was that the problem in the Middle East is that there's some truth to what everybody says. And I think that that is what continues to plague the outcome. And I also think that to have peace in that neighborhood, you're going to need Jordan and Egypt to play a big role.
And they seem to be, I don't want to say, I just watched the news today. They seem to be a little bit hesitant from the reports today. They don't want, Jordan doesn't want to get involved anymore. They have a bunch of Palestinians there.
70% of Jordan is Palestinian.
Yeah. So, I mean, and here's the other thing. I heard this. One of the brighter members, I'm being facetious, of course, say, Trump said he was going to do it. It isn't done.
Yeah.
Duh. These people have been fighting for 60 years. It isn't going to happen overnight.
Well, he said, you know, recently as well, he said, well, inflation during the campaign, he kept saying this is the number one problem for the American people, inflation. He was asked last week if inflation was the number one problem and when he was going to solve it. He said, well, I never said that immigration is the problem. And this is what, you know, you one of the challenges you have in public life is you try to frame an argument.
Right, exactly.
Sometimes the argument is put in front of you. Other times you are putting up the argument. But you come out of the room after a very complicated discussion, in my case, of, let's say, a tax issue or Medicare or Social Security. And you walk out and the reporter, decent enough,
yeah,
you anticipate that they're going to ask you a question about Medicare or Social Security or tax. And they say, what about seizing Panama? And, you know, you're just not ready for the drama every hour. And then it's, we're going to invade Greenland, change the name of the Gulf of Mexico. And this week, over the weekend, essentially saying that the Palestinians should go to other countries. That's not policy.
No. I mean, after this winter, I won't be relocating to Greenland. No. There's a strong possibility the whatever they call that body of water under Texas. But but you know, I think, yeah, I can appreciate what you're saying. I can appreciate what you're saying because I'm all kind of the same way. I get ready for an interview, like with you.
Yep.
I do research. You've been all over Berkshire County. People are loving you. You know, Jack is worth my weight in gold, and trust me, I had to put him through college.
He's here beaming.
Well, and I'm eating, so there you go. but the is we got to find a middle of the road.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here with people. You and I have grown up in one era. And those people, they're leaving. I the guy that got me on, and I feel I have to do this. I don't have to, but I want to do this. Dick Carrick, Vietnam guy, veteran, got me big in a Legion, big in a VFW, got me on an honor flight to D.C.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was a little upset. They put extra guards on the White House. I thought that was uncalled for just because I was. But
they've heard of you.
Yeah, I guess. But anyhow, he passed away suddenly after shoveling snow.
Yeah.
And he's my ear. You know, so I think, how do I want to phrase? I don't want to lose any of the new people to anybody. And they're kind of up and down now a little bit.
Well, I mean, the demographics, particularly of those who had military service, that's a dramatic story now about the World War II vets. I think I've mentioned before when I was a child, I mean, literally 10 or 11 years old, either it was Life magazine or Look magazine, on the cover they had a picture of the last Civil War veteran.
Wow. Yeah, I remember.
And now we're looking at the last of the World War II veterans.
Exactly.
You know, and the Korean veterans, they're all well into their 80s now, late 80s, and the Vietnam veterans are well into their late 70s and 80s.
Yeah. How do I look?
You look great.
Thanks. No, but you're right. You know, now that you say that, I remember sitting on a corner of North at Eagle when, with my mother, because my father was a fireman, and it was the 4th of July fireman's muster, and that you're exactly right. I remember the last Civil War veteran was in the vehicle going down waving.
Yeah.
Yeah. God. Well, that can't be us. That'd be two other guys. We can't be that old.
Well, I'll tell you, since you raised it, though, because it's a fascinating story that we paid probably when I first went to Congress, obviously a while ago, but when I first went to Congress for those first years, we were still paying survivor benefits to the widows of Civil War veterans.
Wow.
And the reason for that was because they had sent for mail order brides. So cool. You get some Civil War vet who was in his 80s and sent away for a 20-year-old bride, and she was entitled to survivor benefits.
Wow.
It was pretty wild. Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I've got to love him. What do you see with the party? Would you ever consider the party splitting?
I hope not. I mean, I understand the criticism.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but another startling statistic. I was talking to Bill Galvin a couple of weeks ago, and what's happened in Massachusetts with party affiliation is remarkable. I think that Republicans now make up 8% of the voting population, but Democrats are at about 25 or 26%. So 2/3 now of the voters are approximate are independents, and they more and more drive these elections. I do think the advantage of political parties is that they aggregate disparate issues.
Oh,
they bring it together based on some negotiation.
There is
some accountability when we consider that the Democratic Party is the oldest political party in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party is, I think, the second or one of the oldest for sure. Right. The parties have both changed in the past, Bill, and they're changing again. We are having a real problem. Not me. I do fine with working class blue collar voters. But the Democratic Party now is attracting wealthier voters. But simultaneously, we're losing working class voters. I mean, Trump's victory, despite what he says, there was no mandate in that victory, but there was a consistency to it. I mean, he won all of the 7 battleground states, roughly within a small margin, but he won them. What concerns me is we, in some measure, lost this election because of messaging. And when I used to hear the arguments about defund the police, get rid of ICE, and open borders, I thought that was a prescription for trouble.
Yeah.
The American people do not support that. And I pushed back on those issues.
You were a mayor. You know how vital they are.
They're critical.
Yeah.
And when they show up at your house, you're not asking them if they're a Democrat or Republican. They're there because you need them.
Right.
And I think that ICE plays an important role. And I also think that ICE was only acting upon orders. If you don't like the orders, which none of us at the time was, some of those would seem to be moments of retribution, then you change the elected officials who make those decisions. Yeah. And I think that on the issue of, as it came to be, you need to know who's in the country.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. You know, register. Barack Obama said, register, get in line.
Yeah.
And I do think right now I feel badly for those people that were awaiting hearings.
Yep.
Because they were going through the process.
Yeah.
So that's different than somebody who snuck into the country and has had 10 convictions for serious crime. That example, I think, in Boston of the fugitive from Haiti.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been arrested 17 times. He needs to be deported. Yeah. He's been convicted. He should go.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you well know, there are members of your party who don't think there are members of the other side who think anybody who wasn't born third, fourth generation here should go. I mean, I'm second generation.
Me too.
My parents. Yeah. So, I mean, and I have a soft spot. I probably have told you this story before, but with my memory, I don't remember where the car is. Got to park. I always press that little alarm to find it. I should have a jack with me. Oh, I do, with the Polish princess. But when you think of some people We have to, I guess, be a humanitarian, first of all. But my saintly aunt came with my grandparents, my grandfather and grandmother, her sister. Come down to Ellis Island, coughed, they put her right back on a boat, took her 8 years to get here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think back on them, and I also watched some of the news where a lot of the people who live, and I was in Texas and Arizona. Those people who came legitimately and legally, they're a little TO too.
Yeah, and one of the problems we have, which is, by the way, a substantial problem as it relates to immigration, a lot of these people came on a legitimate visa and just stayed.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I had a funny one. This is maybe 10 years or so ago, and fellow stopped me and he said, look, he was from Ireland. He said, I'd like to be able to talk to you about my status. And he said, I came on a visa for holiday. And I said, well, how long ago was that? And he said, 2.5 years. I said, well, that's a hell of a holiday.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that instance, which is overwhelmingly a part of this problem, people just overstayed their visas.
Yeah.
It's about 16 million people who are in the country. Technically, they're undocumented. But of that number, millions have a status of deferred action.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this argument that everybody who is undocumented in America is a criminal is not true. But I agree with the idea that for the criminals, let's weed them out.
Yeah, and I was glad to hear our governor change her opinion.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. I get tired of reporters that say, well, he flipped up and she flip-flopped. No, they got more information. She got more information about what was going on in the centers down there and all the crime and stuff. She said, I don't want that.
Facts change opinion. Yeah, facts change, opinions change.
That's right.
And she did not foresee spending $2 billion in Massachusetts for what is a federal problem.
Right, right.
And the decision that the Republicans and Democrats came to in the Senate last fall, before the election, Trump put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he said blatantly, I don't want to give
a win.
Biden a victory.
Yeah.
What's that got to do with policy?
I know. But
you don't want to give Biden a victory. How about giving the country a victory?
Yeah. Yeah. And you see, you've been there long enough and been through a lot of skirmishes. And I mean that. There's been, Democrats, and there have been skirmishes among Democrats. You know that. but I.
A lot of that.
Yeah. Even locally. Yeah. But I think
we're the only political party that goes to unity meetings by walking through metal detectors.
Yeah. Oh God, has it changed? But I really do think that the adults, I hope, not think, I hope, and I pray, that the adults in the rooms, both rooms, Senate and House, well, think of Joe and Mary Sixpack, which I belong to that crew, because some folks here, and they are struggling. I mean, I'll tell you off air sometime about what the princess does, but for people we know that are not getting by.
Yeah.
I just think it's a difficult time in the world, very difficult time in the world, and I hope that some of your fellow colleagues down there in the both houses realize our enemies are watching.
For sure, and one of the moments that was very poignant 4 years ago after Biden became president. I was at a get-together with him. I think it was for St. Patrick's Day, and we were in the Rayburn Room, which you're familiar with, a beautiful room at the House of Representatives. And it was a very small number of us. And he said something that just stayed with me. He said, you know, he had talked to Putin and he had talked to President Xi. And he said they both related to him their belief that democracy was no longer sustainable. And that the idea of American democracy had become too fragile. And you almost needed what the Russians or the Chinese practice. It's a sovereign form of democracy where one person runs the show and the others just all acquiesce to their demands. But in our system, we take a fundamental challenge in front of us. We say that, like it or dislike it, there's going to be a presidential election on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November of even numbered years. And the outcome is going to be broadly acceptable, even if we don't like the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope and pray that we never lose that.
Yeah. It's a representative democracy, and I don't want to lose it. I feel, even for my colleagues, I use this example, and a lot of young people ask me if I'm in a college classroom or I'm in a high school classroom, I'm speaking to a group, I talk about the odds of getting elected to the House of Representatives. I mean, your chances as a male of getting to the House of Representatives are less than your chances of playing Major League Baseball. And for women, your chances of getting elected, your chances of playing in the professional women's golf tour are better than your chances of getting elected to Congress. Right. I mean, in our history, about 12,000 men and women have been elected to the House of Representatives. It's wild. And, you know, we're coming up on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And like everything else, it'll be hotly debated. But never to miss the point of the odds against what happened in Concord and Lexington.
That's right.
This was the most powerful military in the world that we confronted, essentially with a ragtag army.
Yeah.
And when they concluded their work at Constitution Hall in Philadelphia, and Jefferson finished the Declaration of Independence, I mean, it was startling what they asserted. Now, granted, it did not mean for all members of the American family at that time.
Right.
The same things that it meant for some, but it did mean that we were going to quest for the more perfect union. And the odds at Concordton and Lexington at that bridge.
Right.
Of what they did. I mean, and by the way, you know, you think of what it was like for Washington at Valley Forge.
Yeah.
Or Saratoga.
Ticonderoga.
And you know, I'm sitting with you. If you look out the window at State Street, right, literally right over the courthouse is located on State Street. General Knox carried cannon up that street from Ticonderoga to Dorchester Heights.
Yeah.
And
there's a rock with a plaque. If you're up near Patrick's pub, I know you'd never go in there, but you walk by it. It's right on the corner there. That said, that's where there's a hard to believe a tavern there, and that's where they planned the raid on Ticonderoga.
Yeah, and you know the again, you love history, and I love history, and I mean, I look back and I think that, you know, when Washington declared victory at Dorchester Heights, what he never bothered to tell the American people was that the British were long gone when he got there.
Well, a minor point.
Yeah.
Well, I just pulled out Doris Kearns Goodwin book to just Team of Rivals.
Excellent book.
Oh yeah, but I had to read something for something I'm doing. I had to reread it to remind myself that it is possible.
It's possible, and the other part of it is that I was with her in spring of last year. She spoke to the Historical Society of Massachusetts in Boston.
Wow.
And she did a great job. And she's done history a favor because she's given us these personalities, warts and all. Hardly is there a moment when we've ever said, I can't wait to vote for so-and-so because they're perfect. That's not the argument. The argument is, opposed to the opponent, how do I grade them?
That's right.
And I think that what Doris Kearns Goodwin did with the Team of Rivals she pointed out that although Lincoln is considered the great statesman, he was not a bad politician.
No.
The convention was held in Springfield. They printed phony tickets for admission.
Yeah.
And Lincoln also figured out, to his credit, he was nobody's first choice.
That's right.
But he was everybody's second or third choice.
There was a play here. If you ever see it, make sure you get to it. It was at Berkshire Theater Group down at the Unicorn. Abe Lincoln from Illinois. And it was, if you get it, read it. You'd enjoy reading it. I went to see it. It was captivating because I'm a student of Lincoln, if you can say that. I'm sure Sister Maria John would say I'm not a student of anything, but she's long gone. She's got her eternal reward. I just hope she's not where I'm going. But it was, showed Lincoln's barnacles, his self-doubt. And it showed him, his wife. And it was such a wonderful play. But you just reminded me of it, too. No one's perfect. Everybody has barnacles.
When you look at Lincoln, how discouraged he was in 1861, 1862, and through midway of 1863, nothing really has gone right. No. The generals that he's hired have not accomplished what he wanted. And until Grant seizes Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Yeah.
After 1 year, when Grant wins at Vicksburg, Lincoln's fortunes are changed. When Grant comes to Washington and Lincoln declares him to be the commander of the Army of the Potomac, it's not based on anything other than the fact that Lincoln believes this guy is a winner.
Yeah.
You know, it's a ruthless calculation, but it worked. And I was just reading about over the weekend, there's a book on it, a review of Sherman's quest through Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
But Lincoln's faith in Sherman. I mean, it's those lines that you read from some of the great histories where Grant and Sherman have this great bond, you know, but Grant leaves the military for a while during the Civil War.
Yeah.
Sherman leaves the military.
Yeah.
And Sherman's response was, Grant stayed by me when people said he was drinking.
Right.
And I stayed by Grant when people said I was crazy.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from Precision Brows, specializing in creating flawless microblading that enhances beauty and saves time every day. Find them online at myprecisionpmu.com or call 413-553-1059.
Underwriters are so important for keeping this station alive. Hi, this is Sean Sayre, Executive Director of PCTV. I'd like to thank our local businesses for supporting Pittsfield Community Radio and for believing in the mission of the station. When you hear underwriting messages on the air, you know those companies support WTBR-FM. If you're listening now and your business would like to join in and support us, call me today at 445-4234 and get involved, or visit us at WTBRFM.com. It will make all the difference.
The Berkshire Queer History Project by Berkshire Stonewall Community Coalition is an ongoing initiative to document the lived experiences of our community and ensure the preservation of our voices in our voices. Our goal is to collect these stories to form an archive that may be used for future exhibitions, research, or simply as a way to remember our past struggles and triumphs and look towards the future together. For more information, please get in touch with us at berkshirestonewall.org.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Tired of the same old on the radio?
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's all the same day.
Hi, I'm Hannah. Each week I search the archives for hidden gems from your favorite artists, plus all the latest releases and rock trivia. Please join me for Deep Cuts, Thursdays, 4 to 6, at 89.7 WTBR-FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And UCP of Western Mass. Turn passion into purpose when you apply at UCP of Western Mass, now offering full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. It's more than just a job, it's our identity. Apply today at ucpwma.org/jobs.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
But even then, how they blind people, because yeah. I've read Grant probably had a few, but he wasn't a falling down drunk from what
but he had a problem, and yeah. he was good at being a general. He graduated near the bottom of his class at West Point.
Yeah.
He went to West Point because his father forced him to, and he was a haberdasher who would repeatedly fallen on hard times because of the fact he was not a good businessman.
Yeah.
And he got fleeced a number of times. I also, what I'd say to people, you know, Mark Twain wrote his memoir with him. He's the ghostwriter. And Grant wrote that book to take care of his family. He was dying.
Yeah.
He had cancer and he knew he was going to die. So anybody who's read this work that Grant, it's spectacular. When he recounts the relationships and the, you know, there's a moment in there where I think he's referencing Nathan Bedford Forrest. And he said, the only thing that the two of us agreed on was that the Civil War was about slavery.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because now the revisionists are saying, well, it was about states' rights. No, it was about slavery.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that these guys are remarkable in what they were able to do.
We got to stop the, and people have to stop the revisionists.
Exactly.
They're distorting our history, and we'll never learn from our mistakes if they get Pollyannered. And I don't even know if that's a word, but I'm sick of, you know, I'm an old, I remember the Vietnam War very clearly.
Yeah.
And now I'm having people tell me, oh no, you don't understand. Dude, I was there. Really? I do understand. You know, you guys, you were out of control. I just had someone tell me that 2 or 3 months ago. You were let to run wild. Really? Where'd you hear that? Oh, my college professor told me that. Well, he's goofy.
Yeah. Well, if you consider the argument you've just made, that most of Vietnam and Southeast Asia, they want to be more like America than they want to be like China.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's because of the contribution people like you made. I mean, there's no doubt about the expansion of the war, but what is important to remember is that today, and by the way, the Vietnamese that have come to America, they want to be Americans.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And I know several. I know
they're
several
flourishing
of them.
Here in Springfield.
And they're flourishing here.
They want to be Americans.
The Polish princess does some tutoring on the side.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they're wonderful. Listen, the North, they had a cause, and they were fighting for their cause. I'm never going to badmouth them.
Yeah.
Ever. And the South and the people who have come here, they're contributors.
Yep.
They contribute. And it's the same with a lot of it. I'm so sick of people just downtrodden people because they're immigrants or they're this or they're that. You know, we just have to stay focused and the good, and try to get people, and I would challenge you to this. We got to get civics back in school.
For sure.
We got to get history, real history, back in school.
Yeah. And what we want is an accurate accounting of history.
Yes.
not what we want to say is the revenge of history.
Right, right.
Point it all out, which is fair.
Yeah.
But also, in 1776, what happened with the establishment of our Constitution and representative democracy overwhelmingly has been great for the world.
Absolutely. Look at the world. Yeah. Look at the world. I mean, look at the people. I like you. I've been all over the world. I've seen people. This is one of my favorite visions. Kids in South Africa when I was there were competing to go to school Saturday morning. Competing.
Yep.
And you'd see them in their little uniforms and their white iron blouses and shirts. And they were living in a township that had one electric wire.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we should make travel to more challenging countries mandated in the schedule.
Well, you know, I mean, John Lewis, the great civil rights champion.
Loved him. Yeah.
Marvelous human being. He would always say we could never have done this alone.
Yeah.
And he would always use that term that I referenced earlier about our quest for a more perfect union. But he also points out that a lot of ordinary people, regular people, did the right thing.
Exactly.
And I always think in my own case, not for any great reason other than the fact that I just saw the difference between right and wrong. In 1984, 1985, I sold the city stocks in South Africa. I just said, for our pension system, we should not be holding stocks that support an apartheid government in South Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't because I didn't know John Lewis then. I didn't know, you know, but I just felt that an example would be selling those stocks, things like that. And again, a young guy like you in Vietnam, you were there. Because you felt an obligation to country.
That's right. I don't tell a lot. Well, I guess I do. I volunteered. So.
You volunteered.
Yeah, but you see, I'm a. You'll get a kick. I got to tell you this. Tell Jack. Close his ears. I had a person ask me, "Well, what kind of a Democrat are you?" In a really slurred, cantankerous voice, and I said, "Well, I'm a JFK." Oh, he said, "You're a dinosaur." I said, "Well, maybe, but this dinosaur believes enough to put his." I got to clean it up for the radio, otherwise we're all in trouble. His butt on the line, because of something JFK believed. And it's that's why I was asking you earlier about the party. There's so many, they think we're dinosaurs.
Well, I mean, so let's put it this way then, if they're thinking that way. So when I went to the House in 88, there were a majority of Democrats in Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina. Now, they weren't Massachusetts Democrats, but they voted with us on rules and procedures.
Yeah.
They voted for Medicare.
Yeah.
And they voted for Medicaid. And a lot of them voted for the Civil Rights Act of 1965.
Absolutely. And LBJ doesn't get the credit he deserves.
He deserves it.
Yes, he does. He got it through. He took Kennedy's dream and got it through. In my opinion. I got to do it before you get
it. The way that Lyndon Johnson sold the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act is masterful.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it was, you talk about the hands of a individual who understood the rhythms of legislative life, but the way he picked off Republicans, the way that he picked off the recalcitrants to sell the Civil Rights Act, and the way that he cautioned Dr. King to not attach the Voting Rights Act to the Civil Rights Act. He said, we'll do the Civil Rights Act in 64. We'll come back and do the Voting Rights Act in 65. And it changed America for the better.
It did. And you see, we remember that, but so many kids have never even heard that. They're not taught that.
Well, they it, They can thank That's Johnson good. For PBS and NPR, and they can thank Johnson for the Wilderness Act and Medicare and Medicaid, Civil Rights, yeah. Voting Rights Act. I mean, you go right down the list. He's the first guy that makes a commitment to the issue of the environment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's startling what happens from 64 to 68. But my point is, without those Democrats of different philosophies, for sure, it wouldn't happen.
No. And again, that needs to be. And it was more for. You may disagree with me, and that's certainly your privilege. But I think then that back in those days, and I hate using that term because it makes you sound old, not me. I went to school in Methuselah. Plato was in the class ahead of me. But they did it for the good of, I was there when they were still doing it for the good of the peeps. You know, I better do this or you'll get in trouble. The views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way, represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Mayor Marchetti and the Mayor's Office, Peter White and the City Council, and or the people who are riding their bike because it's 20 degrees out today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bike lanes.
Yeah, bike lanes. God love them. You know, I never mind. But I just think I maybe it's just an old man hoping and dreaming and praying that we put down these axes. You know, a quick war story. I came back from Vietnam. One of my friends growing up, his wife didn't want him hanging around with me anymore. And it hurt. So we used to sneak. Our kids both played basketball in the Catholic Youth Center. So there was a little cubby that only men could go in. So we'd go in there and see each other and talk because she wouldn't talk to him if he got caught talking to me. So anyhow, years later, I just went up to her at another friend's daughter's wedding and said, you know, it's time we stop burying the hatchet in each other's head. We're right. A lot closer to the grave than we are to the womb. And I don't want to go out this way. And now
you're
we're
absolutely right.
Again. You know, and I wish we'd get back to that.
Well, democracy is supposed to be noisy.
Yeah, but not me.
There's clutter to democracy, but also strong opinions can help develop consensus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's okay to disagree, but you don't have to be disagreeable.
And you don't have to be mean and angry about it, which too much of a national conversation is about. I mean, I think that these cable shows reward conflict. They don't reward solutions. I think texting, people use it, obviously. But I also think that you give curt answers. I think that social media is not helpful to explaining complicated issues.
Yeah.
And the truth is, one of the political rewards today, I think, for a lot of people in these primaries across the country, the reward is not to do something politically. And that's regrettable.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, as you go forward, I mean, you're going back into the fray, and it is a fray right now.
Yes.
And I think that's the proper word. You certainly can outrank me, but if you do, I'll call Gene. There has to be voices of reason on both sides. And I don't question at all. You'll be one of them.
Well, thank you.
You always have been. You always have been. I mean, I never saw you screaming in the thing. And, you know, I watched some of these guys on the other side say, salt?
Yes.
Packs. I mean, they're apoplectic.
Yeah.
Dude, you're going to have a stroke. Chill out. I agree with them. I really do. I think every state needs to get theirself in line.
Well, for me, I'm having some fun because they all said it was going to be easy. I know better.
Oh, easy?
There's nothing easy about that issue.
No. And while it's certainly an issue to be looked at, and I can understand the people from South Carolina and Tennessee and all these places that don't supporting New York, especially now. I mean, we only got a few minutes left. Your thoughts on California?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that we're not going to withhold aid to California based on the debt ceiling. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, okay. When there were forest fires and flooding in Alabama, I didn't say, is it a red state or a blue state, Democrat or Republican? I just said, get them the assistance they need. That's the national principle, Bill. If there's a natural disaster or if there is a disaster somewhere across the country, it's the American family. We don't have a litmus test and check how they voted in the last election. We say they need help. Get it to them.
Now, but should there be, and I don't want to use the word string, there should be conditions like some of the stuff that has come out. Now, I don't know if it's factual. That'll be studied and we'll know. But they're going to have to take some positive prevention steps.
Yeah. Yeah. After they get the assistance.
Yeah.
They need the assistance right now. Yeah.
Well, the same with the people in the Carolinas.
Yes.
You know,
North Carolina, they needed help. I voted for their money. New York, some Republicans wouldn't vote to give money to New York. I thought that was an abomination.
Wow. Yeah, you can, like, maybe you and I will have, not a disagreement, but a difference in philosophy.
How's that?
I think the party system is good, but I think every so often we have to, the entire party has to sit back and say, are we here doing the people's business?
Right. Well, Jack Kennedy said that partisanship stopped at the water's edge.
Yes.
And he was right.
And he also said it's not a Democratic thing. It's not a Republican thing. Is it the right thing?
Right.
Yeah. And
Jack's giving me the signal here, so I'm on to the next meeting.
Now, Jack, I just said you're worth my weight in gold. What kind of a buddy is it? Threw me right under the bus, Richie. Oh, well, all right. Well, listen, all I'm going to tell you is this. I appreciate you coming on.
Always love doing the show.
I think this was a good show. And a lot of the things that I popped at you were what people were saying.
Well, you give a great perspective and a great dimension based on a long and effective life.
Yeah, the long is festive. I don't know how effective it is. Freaking long. I got a shoulder now, and it's the sad part about it. You'll appreciate this, I think. I can hardly move it. I got arthritis, bursitis, and I got to wait till like March to get an MRI to look at it. So, and the bad part, honest to God, it's my drinking arm. So there you go. Congressman Richard Neal, you represent us well, in my opinion. And for all those that are out there, say a prayer for the congressman. He doesn't have an easy job, really and truly. Say a prayer for all of us. And remember, we're in this together.
That's right.
Let's try to lift people up. I try to make people smile every day.
You do.
To break the monotony of some of their lives. Yep. So we're all in this together. Let's pull the wagon in the same way. And Jack, thanks. You lost your Christmas card. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Bill.
You'll be well, my friend.